This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we're speaking with Mike and Vanessa Dobson, co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet Popcorn. You would not be alone if you think of gourmet popcorn as a niche business. That's certainly how Pop Art started. They began by offering fun seasoned popcorn first to friends and later to customers at local farmers markets in the summer of 2011. By the start of 2014, Mike and Vanessa had successfully placed Pop Art into 75 local stores and sold nearly 150,000 bags of popcorn. That's a lot of popcorn, but it's still a relatively small business. But something magical is happening this year. Pop Art is now in over 1,000 stores nationwide and is on track to sell nearly 500,000 bags of popcorn this year alone. Mike and Vanessa, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
So I think the really fun part of the conversation is going to be to talk about what's magical happening this year. What's the result of the last 3 years of work? But before we go there, let's back up a little bit and give our audience kind of the background. So first, tell us what Pop Art does.
So much like Andy Warhol did for the Campbell's soup can in the art world, we do for popcorn. We start with organic air-popped corn and infuse it with fun out-of-the-box flavor combinations that appeal to the slightly eccentric foodie and snack lover.
Andy Warhol and salty snacks. I don't think I've seen the two connected before, but I can see that. Although he was an artist for a long time, right?
He was.
And he just kind of popularized kind of making art out of what a lot of people would consider to be the mundane. Do you see relatives there, relative connections, the way I described it as well? Do you think most people view popcorn as mundane?
Not mundane necessarily, but more of an ordinary object, something that is every day. The all-American snack is popcorn, typically salt and butter, and something that everyone has tried in the past and, you know, goes with movies. And there is a long tradition of popcorn in American culture. And our concept is sort of to update it and, you know, make it fun, different, and vibrant by infusing
it. You guys are certainly doing that. If you haven't seen the advertising for it, it's excellent. It's catchy. It definitely makes you want to go out and grab a bag of the popcorn and try it if you haven't already. So when you guys were making popcorn for friends and then went to a farmer's market, was the idea of going to the farmer's market to see if you could start a business, or was it just something fun to do?
So we had just moved from New York City, had complete clean slates, and we were making this popcorn in New York, ended up entering a contest for Next Big Small Brand and came in third place. Mind you, we had other jobs. We were working a million hours a week, and to come in third place in New York was, you know, was pretty shocking, to be honest with you.
How many people were in the contest?
There were a few hundred people. So we were thrilled about that. That sort of just planted the seed for us. So when we had moved out here and had this clean slate, a friend of ours was doing a farmer's market, and we just figured, well, you know, let's just give it a shot. Let's see how it goes, you know, and started selling it in Ziploc bags at farmers markets, and we're selling out week after week.
So I'm guessing the branding competition, I've seen these before. People are branding all different types of things, right? A software company, both things you can touch, feel, explore, taste, in your case, and things you cannot.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking you guys had big plans for Pop Art from day one, given that you were putting that much effort into the brand, the image, and how you portray that. Is that fair?
Yes. Well, I think it was more of an unconsciously we knew that we wanted to start the company. When we were living in New York, it was, you know, they're very big business centered. And so when we went to the Small Business Association there, they essentially handed us this big giant ball of red tape and said, here, sort this out, and then come back to me. And we didn't have the time nor the energy to start the company then. And so it wasn't until we moved here that...
But you kept working on the brand when you were in New York.
Well, no, not even.
The brand wasn't necessarily had even started. The concept of popcorn came first.
Yep.
We didn't necessarily have a name for it. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time we called it Happy Day Gourmet, which is our company name. Inspired by my grandfather, who he was a wonderful man, had a stroke, and it affected the speech side of his brain, and he was able to say happy day clear as a bell, you know, could say it for greetings, cheers, goodbye, you know, it was always happy day. And initially, that was sort of the inspiration. It was Happy Day Gourmet. And when we moved to Utah and started selling it at farmers markets, we needed a specific brand name for the popcorn. And that's...
And also, we tried to register Happy Day Gourmet at first and trademark it. And
somebody beat you to it.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. So
it's hard to come up with a unique name.
Absolutely. And so we, you know, we had to look for something else. And both of us have a background in the arts, different aspects of art, but both love and appreciate all kinds of art. We were sitting at home just looking around our house and, you know, pop curtain, pop floor, pop sofa, pop TV, pop, you know, and then there's this just beautiful art book in our living room and it's art. And so we're like, pop art. Pop art.
Yeah.
That's it, that's you it. Know. And we gave it to our lawyer. Our lawyer did a search on pop art, and there was another company who trademarked pop art, a candy company, more specifically Spangler Candy, who owns Dum Dum Lollipops. You know, they've
so
been
it's
around
close.
For...
It's in the snack business, but your lawyer still gave you the green light.
No, she didn't give us the green light. She actually, you know, said that we probably shouldn't go there because, you know, with trademarks, if it's... Even though it's not exactly the same, it's not a salty snack, but candy and snack foods are so related that she thought that they would cause a fuss, plus they're, you know, over 100-year-old company, so they could easily put the kibosh on it.
But there was a solution there somewhere because your product's called Pop-Up.
Yes. So, you know, what she had said was, you know, there were a few different ways of going about it if we really had to have this name. The one way that she strongly recommended we not do is call the company and ask. She's like, but you're going to automatically tell them you want to use it. They're going to keep an eye out. They're going to tell you no, and they're going to keep an eye out. And so you'll never be able to use it that way. But we felt sort of creepy and weird to just use the name for a certain amount of time without letting them know. Plus, there's all that risk of if they do find out, they can still potentially stop us after we've been using it. So,
but better to find that out sooner rather than later. Don't
exactly,
you think?
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I just went on Google, found out who the CEO is, called him, and asked. And to our surprise, you know, he said, he's like, I don't see a problem with it. Let me just check with our, you know, the vice president of marketing and make sure. They were using the trademark for an ad campaign that they were doing where the Mona Lisa was sucking on a lollipop. You know, so they were calling it pop art.
Right.
And he, you know, they both came back. Not only did they come back and say that it would be okay as long as we don't do candy, as long as popcorn is our main ingredient, then we're good to go. And they actually drew up the papers for us on their expense.
Wow.
Gave it to us. Our lawyer said that the papers look great, that we're good to go. And so it was just a really good example of, you know, big business being small business friendly and allowing a small company to kind of grow and get out there.
Well, it also, I think, foretold the importance of your business instincts and your acumen, right? Because that is the right thing to do. And it's easy to say, well, we'll just go under the radar. How likely are they to find out about it? Well, you know what? When you've got it in 1,000 stores, it's pretty likely they're going to find
for
out.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to have to change your name at that point. I think you were wise, obviously, in hindsight, knowing what the outcome is. But even without that, I think that was still the best thing to do. Reach out to them. If it's something you can use, great. If not, go back to the drawing board, develop another name. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Mike and Vanessa Dobson, co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet Popcorn. There's a really cute, I don't know if cute's the right word or not, South Park episode that talks about naming companies. It's not very Utah friendly. So if you YouTube it, just be forewarned. But it just makes fun of the fact that all the good names are taken, and even most of the lousy names are taken. It's really hard to come up with one. So, but I love not only the name, but the image, and this is a radio show, so obviously folks can't see it. But you guys, at least... have some charitable giving back, and for a small company, that's hard. I live up in Park City, and you guys sponsored the Park City film series up there. And it just looks so beautiful. You know, they put your ad up on the big screen there, and it just pops. You know, and the other companies there, that some of which until this year were bigger than you guys, could learn a thing or two from your ad campaign, because it really catches your eye and you really want to say, well, what is that? In fact, I think that's how my daughter first found out about you guys, who loves your product. So you guys were in New York City. You came in third in this brand contest. And New York City is known for fashion. It's known for financing, and it's known for marketing. Mm-hmm. And really, in a lot of respects, marketing is one of the key components to your success. So what brought you? I could make a strong argument that a company like Pop Art should be based in New York City. What made you decide you wanted to move back to Utah?
You know, after living in New York for a long period of time, there's something about open space and grass and mountains that is appealing. I'm originally from here, and Vanessa has been visiting here for a long time, and we actually met here at Sundance in 2007. And we were ready for both mental and physical space.
I get that. I moved here from the Bay Area and loved living in the Bay Area, but you know, I'm a better person here in Utah, and part of that has to do with the outdoor activities. And part of it just has to do with the attitudes of people, right? You can work hard. I mean, you guys are working really, really hard right now, but you can also relax and disconnect and get away from that work hard mentality.
For sure. And also, you know, everybody is definitely working hard in New York, but they're so many people there that to get anything done, contrary to what people think, to get a lot of things done, it takes actually a long time. When you call, you know, someone at a state office, let's just say, you're going to be put on hold for hours, or you're going to wait online for hours. And so here, I just think because the population is so much smaller, you can actually get a lot of things done faster than you could in a big city.
Yeah, well, New York City definitely has its share of very, very successful companies. That said, I think Utah as a state is more business friendly than New York is.
Definitely.
What you're describing.
Mm-hmm. And everyone has been very open to share information and help each other along the way. We've worked with several people that are at different stages, and they've helped us, and now we are returning the favor and helping other companies.
It's a healthy ecosystem, and there's pieces in it that, you know, the companies that have been successful that have gone before your company, probably some of those folks are helping you out and giving you advice, and you know, hopefully 5-7 years from now, after you guys have taking your company further along, when young people come to you, you'll help them out in their journey as well. Have they been helpful at all in building the business, or did you guys just happen to both be there and meet, or do one of you guys have business connections with Sundance? Because I got to think, you know, having Kevin Spacey, a photo with Kevin Spacey eating a bag of Pop Art would not be a bad thing for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So with Sundance directly, we're just starting conversations really with them. We have, through the film series, they do a lot of the Park City film series. We'll do a lot of the Sundance films at the library there. So they have our popcorn there. And so we've found other places sort of outside of the Sundance corporation or institution, if you will, to plug our popcorn into the festivities there.
Okay. Lots of events at Tower Theater. And the Broadway both sell it, and they do really, really well.
I suspect we're going to see some photos of celebrities eating Pop Art. If not this, it's coming up here pretty soon. If not this season, then the next season. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk some more with Mike and Vanessa Dobson, co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet Popcorn. Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Mike and Vanessa Dobson, co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet Popcorn. Let's go back and talk a little bit more about the early days. So you guys both had other jobs at the time.
Yes.
You're doing this on the side. When did you guys make the decision, you know, this is starting to take off, I want to do this full time?
You know, Pop Art made that decision for us. When we had left New York and moved here, we were both actually looking for jobs. Michael was, well, I guess I was looking for a job. I came from a nonprofit background, and so I was looking for different jobs, but something inside of me knew that, no, I want to do my own thing. And I don't know exactly what that is yet, but I know I want to do something. And we were sitting with that for a little bit. We're actually staying at a family condo up in Park City, and we're skiing and, you know, having fun, but at the same time trying to figure out what that is. Michael is a photographer, and so he was doing a lot of photography work for people at the time. And it was, you know, it was just sort of a fluke, if you will. We decided to do this farmer's market. We had no idea how the popcorn was going to do. We had no idea that we would be where we are today when we started the company either. You know, we just wanted to see how it goes, you know.
My friend was in charge of the Mill Creek Farmer's Market, and she told me, she's like, if you come and take pictures of the farmer's market, you know, and people there, I'll give you a free booth. And so we
Perfect.
Were like, okay, well, we'll do the popcorn and I'll take pictures, and you know, we don't have that expense. And we started very humbly. We had 4 air poppers going in our kitchen. In Utah, you're able to do a cottage license and sell at farmers markets, so you can have a license to produce a food product at your home and then sell it at farmers markets. And initially, that's how we started. 4 air poppers. We were blowing every fuse in our kitchen. And
you're doing this out of your home, right? Yeah. In your kitchen, yeah.
Yep. Yep. And then it was just really 3 months later, we moved into a commercial kitchen and started selling at stores like Harmon's. And
because you saw the demand was there from the farmers market.
The demand was there and the buyers were coming. You know, the market actually in Park City was our very first store, and they wanted our popcorn while it was still sold in Ziploc bags. You know, the buyers, like, we have to, people in Park City love popcorn. We have to have this, like, right now. And we didn't think that it was ready for the shelves, and it actually wasn't quite ready for the shelves at the time either, you know. In those Ziploc bags, you get a really quick 2-week shelf life.
Did you initially sell in the store out of a Ziploc bag?
Yes.
Yeah. Really? I wonder if you could do that. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. It was in a Ziploc bag, but then we heat sealed the top so that it was sort of tamper-proof.
Right.
Okay. But still, it had, you know, a really short shelf life, 2 weeks. And we would make a delivery, and I would sort of talk to the product that was sitting on the shelf, like, are you okay in there? Are you sure? You know, and so it was, you know, it was touch and go a little bit, you know, in the beginning with constantly checking on it. And but it was selling really well. Then we moved to more shelf stable packaging just a few months later, which was nice. It gave
us
a little bit.
Still with just one grocery customer?
So we made that change and started selling at Harmon's pretty much right away.
Okay. Yeah, in our new packaging that was more shelf stable and ready to be sold. And, you know, we had to go through the certain steps of getting nutritional facts and getting our UPCs and all of our ingredient lists and get everything.
Yeah, and the buyer at Harmon's was instrumental in helping us get everything ready.
How'd you get in front of the buyer at Harmon's?
Michael did.
That's a funny story. We used to live by the Harmon's in Brickyard. And we were there shopping for groceries, and we knew that, you know, Harmon's was sort of a goal of ours to get into. And I was looking for Marcona almonds for some dish we were making, and there was a gentleman there that, you know, looked like he was in charge. And I just happened to come up to him and say, do you know where I can find Marcona almonds? And he said, I don't know, but let me look around. And we started to talk a little bit, and it turns out that he was the buyer for Harmon's for our category. And we sat, and when he told me that, kind of a light went off, and I think he saw my excitement, and he goes, and what do you do? And I told him that my wife and I had started a gourmet popcorn company, and, you know, we'd love to present it to him. And he's like, well, here's my card. Call my secretary, set up a meeting. And, you know, we did within, you know, a week, and we went in and saw him. And at the time, we were still in the Ziploc bags. And he's like, okay, I like the product, but you need to do nutritional facts, get your UPCs, get everything in line, and then come back to me. He gave us sort of a list of what we needed to do. And it was the motivation for us to really you know, get everything in line and come back. We took us maybe a month to get everything in order, and we came back and presented to him, and he was like, I've never had anyone come back that quickly.
Right, right. Well, there was a lot you had to learn and a lot of connections you had to make. So
for
you got
sure.
a lucky break. Mm-hmm. You jumped. And I think this is the key part, right? I use the phrase, you know, the door opens a little bit and you've got to be willing to walk through the door. You saw the door start to open. You walk through it. And now you've got a whole list of challenges you've got to do.
Absolutely.
Walk us through that month. How did you find the people that could help you make this happen?
So our first connection was with the Department of Agriculture. They came in, they had to inspect our physical home kitchen in order for us to get this cottage license. And so we had a connection with them, and we needed to move into a commercial kitchen. And actually, it was Lydia at Whole Foods Markets, because we were meeting with her at about the same time. And Whole Foods has a whole different criteria of getting in their stores. They, you know, sort of look into all of your ingredients and make sure that those are acceptable for their stores, and they need a recall plan, and they need, you know, all of these different things. And so we were also meeting with her, and one of the things was obviously you need to move into a commercial kitchen. And so she had recommended that we call this other food company that was renting some space in a kitchen to see if there was room there. And so that's how we were able to find that kitchen. The first commercial kitchen that we were in. And then,
those guys probably had connections with the packaging and everything else, right? The commercial kitchens or no?
No. We found the packaging online.
We found
the packaging that we wanted, and then there were a few different websites where you can order it. So that was pretty easy. But then there's also Utah State University. They have a wonderful program for food entrepreneurs.
They have a food science laboratory up there, right?
They do. Mm-hmm. They do. And they have Karen Allen, who is specifically, her job is specifically to help food entrepreneurs get started. And so she helped us with our barcode, our nutritional facts, and a lot of the other things, shelf life testing, you know, that we needed to get for our products to be ready for stores.
And I think that food science group up there is backed by the business development group that's called U-Star.
Okay.
I was just going to ask, I know U-Star has some grants available to companies as they start or for technologies. Did you guys qualify for any grants from the state to help you build your business? Or
we didn't, no. I mean, we were, everything that we made at farmers markets were what sort of allowed us to grow. And you know.
Well, good. I mean, the state of Utah, here you guys are a Utah success, and the state of Utah was helpful from a business standpoint. And from a bureaucratic standpoint, they were helpful, but you didn't have to take any money or any grants to make this happen, which is great. So let's transition. I wanted to get kind of the background, kind of a little bit of your journey to lay the foundation for what's happening this year. And I use the term magic. Do you guys agree? Does it feel like there's something magical happening for you guys in the last 12 months?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I mean, we love it when, you know, we sort of set goals and we see the goals happening, but it's even better when things that are happening are even better than we could even have imagined, you know, and that's sort of where we are right now.
So what and what's created some of this magic? I mean, you were at the beginning of the year, 70 stores. At the end of this year, you'll be in 1,000 stores. How did that happen?
So we were manufacturing everything in our facility. There were three of us. And so between the three of us, we manufactured everything by hand for those 75 stores. We had just the first level of industrial equipment. And so by the time we got to that point, we were fully at capacity. We started looking into getting some help with manufacturing early last year and identified a third-party manufacturer that can help us, and worked with them for about 6 to 9 months, made sure that our product was exactly what it was supposed to be.
Which is hard. I mean, some people may not have an appreciation for it. You know, going from a recipe in the kitchen to a commercial recipe is a very different thing. You just You can't say, well, it's a teaspoon of this and I want to make 1,000, so it's 1,000 teaspoons. It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
And I know there are actually taste engineers. And did you guys, is that how, the process you had to go through?
There's definitely food scientists, and that helps along the way and helped us scale and make the recipe fit on their equipment.
So now you've got the relationship where you can have the product to expand,
mm-hmm.
but now you need the relationships and the distribution to expand. How did you get those relationships?
A lot of it happened organically. You know, buyers would find our products at stores. But I would say a big chunk of it was due to doing some food expos. There are 4 big expos in the country. There's Fancy Food in San Francisco and New York, and then there's Expo East and West. And between those 4 shows, virtually every buyer from every retailer attends those shows. And so everyone from your, you know, Whole Foods national buyer to, you know, Safeway to Kroger, and then to your little mom and pops. So we were able to meet a lot of key buyers at those shows and got invited to present our products and started selling in those stores. So
grocery is an incredibly tough business, and it's also incredibly competitive. So you're at these shows and you have amazing popcorn, very unique flavors, right? But it takes a lot more than that. I mean, there's a lot of folks at those shows that also have that. That's really a point of parity, mm-hmm. for a buyer to consider you. So what do you think helped you break out of the noise and for these guys to say, yeah, we want to have you in our stores? Were there some business metrics that you could point to in the other 70 stores and say, this stuff is really flying off the shelves? Or what was convincing for them?
A lot of it was our branding. And at these shows, you know, we didn't have the budgets that some of these huge competitors do. You know, they would put in $100,000 on their booth, you know, and we went into it with a very tight budget. And
we do mostly all natural products, you know, so there's a growing market for natural and specialty. It's growing by 10% every year. And so we have that going
for us. Which
doesn't
sound like a lot in a lot of businesses, but in groceries, a category that's growing 10% a year gets people's attention, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then we started selling at the Whole Foods Regional, so in 4 states in the Rocky Mountain region. And within a short period of time, we're talking 6 months, our popcorn was number 5 in all of salty snacks. And so
we've been going up against the big name potato chip makers, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely. And so companies that have been in business for 20 years, and you know, here's a brand new company that's already number 5.
What are the 4 brands in front of you? What are the 4 products in front of you?
So at Whole Foods, it would be their 365 brand was number 1. Garden of Eden, and they do all kinds of tortilla chips, and they have several SKUs underneath that brand. And then Boulder Chips and Kettle Chips.
Okay.
So, and then Pop Art.
Now, I'm guessing Boulder Chips and Kettle Chips would view you guys as competitors, or is it friendly competition? I used to live in Boulder. Boulder Chips had a story back in the day very similar to your story. Are other companies that are successful but maybe competing for shelf space, are they still pretty friendly competitors? Or is it pretty intense?
No, yeah. it's a friendly relationship. We haven't met them specifically, but at these food shows, we had an instance where we had 5 of our biggest competitors, I would say, in the popcorn industry. They all kind of came over. We were the new kid, and we found them all at our booth
at
one point.
They had their food scientists over, right, tasting our popcorn.
Right.
I mean, it was pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, like, you just kind of smile and friendly. You know, we're the new kids.
Yeah.
And so
there's no
secrets in grocery either, right? Because they can go buy, you know, they don't have to do that at the trade show. They can go buy a bag of your popcorn, do all the analysis they want.
And so we sort of had fun with that, though, too. I mean, when everybody was over, I mean, it was just such a coincidence that everyone seemed to come over at the same exact time. And so we took it as a photo op, you know. We're like, let's get together and take a picture. And so we took the picture, tweeted, hashtagged all of them so that hopefully their followers can find us, too.
Right.
So that was kind of fun.
that's clever. I wasn't going to go there. I'm going to circle back to the other question. Let's stick with social media. So you do have a Twitter account. I went and looked at. You have about 300 followers. I was expecting to see thousands.
Yep.
So how important is social media to the growth of your company? I'm guessing it's less important than I thought it was going to be when I started doing a little bit of background research.
Yeah. So we mainly focus on Facebook. We find that we get the most, I guess, feedback from that social media site in particular.
How many Facebook likes do you have?
We've got almost 1,300.
Yeah. Okay. So still relatively small.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
For a company that's going to be at 1,000 stores.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think we will see it grow. We haven't put the energy into it that we would like to, but there's a lot of potential there for sure, and we would like to explore it more.
So, you know, it's going to segue back into the question I was going to ask, which is groceries are very competitive, and it's hard to keep your margins as you're growing. And I have some friends that know the grocery business very well. My father used to run a small grocery store, like a 7-Eleven. And, you know, the challenge is nobody in that whole chain is making money. I mean, if you look at the publicly held grocery stores, you know, their net margins are 1 or 2% if they're lucky. And the folks that are making money, if you look at the publicly held distributors, it's the distributors that are making the money in the chain. So my friends that have tangentially or directly been involved in helping brands get in the grocery store, what they have told me is the way you do this is you avoid getting distributors into the game as long as possible, and you do the heavy lifting that you guys have done to get into your 70 stores. At what point do you say, you know what, now's the time to bring a distributor in, and how do you protect yourself to make sure you can maintain a healthy business on your end?
It's watching your margins. The bigger distributors have contracts that have a lot of different things in them that you just sort of have to be careful of. So I think just reading through your contract and looking for certain things that don't feel right and negotiating better terms with them helps.
So did the grocery stores go to the distributors and say, I want to have pop art in our stores? Or is it the distributor that's getting you into the stores at this point?
It's a combo of both. We have,
and is your margin different if the grocery store tells the distributor, I want to have it? I would think it should be because you've driven that.
The margin will stay the same, whether the distributor got us the business or whether the grocery food store asked the distributor.
So you
for
now have
products.
Like a master agreement with the distributor, and he distributes to all your stores, including the 70 that you were in at the beginning of the year.
So we have several distributors that we work with. We have 5 or 6. So depending on the store and the region, it's a different distributor.
Okay. So you guys, right now, popcorn, gourmet popcorn, unique flavors. I love the story, Michael, about your grandfather and Happy Days Gourmet Foods. Is that
Happy Day Gourmet? Yeah.
Gourmet, yeah. So you guys don't have that name, but that name would imply other products outside of popcorn as well. Are you guys at the point where you're thinking about that, or are you strictly focusing on let's make sure these 1,000 stores get boarded properly, and that's a discussion for another day?
We are taking things. We want to be very focused on what we're doing right now. We have other ideas within our pop art brand that we're going to expand on.
Definitely won't be candy. I know that. How big of a market? How much do Americans spend a year? And most of us wouldn't know this, but you guys are in the business. You would. How much do Americans spend a year on popcorn?
Popcorn, they spend about $50 billion on popcorn.
$50 billion. Wow. That's a bigger business than I would have guessed. And who's the biggest brand in popcorn today?
Well, I mean,
I believe it's still Orville Redenbacher, because they have bought up other smaller brands, but their kernels are probably the most recognized in the industry. But they have started to do some shelf popcorn, but.
You know, when you mentioned Orville, I had forgotten that that's a big name. But yet when I go to the grocery store, I see Orville and I'm buying popcorn for my girls. That's, you know, one of the brands that I'll consider Jiffy Pop from when I was a little kid. Now, because you guys have been supportive of the Park City Film Series and you've hooked my girls on your popcorn, your popcorn's on that list as well. But, you know, Orville's an interesting situation because, as I recall, his whole pitch back in the day was, you know, you get more kernels that pop. And it seems like that's a point of parody now, right? Everybody, it doesn't, I never buy any popcorn and say, well, gee, not enough, I've got a big problem here I've got to solve, not enough kernels that popped. But it brings, circling back to pop art, you guys are successful. People are going to notice, hey, you guys are in 1,000 stores. Holy cows, this gourmet, all-natural flavors is selling. Consumers want that. And are you worried about competition? And how do you differentiate yourself when the bigger companies say, okay, we're going to, my daughter likes that, we were talking before that we started talking on air, the white Parmesan. So how do you keep it fresh and keep yourself differentiated enough?
Innovation. And so we, with our flavor combinations, we do some pretty off the wall flavors like our Thai coconut curry, rosemary with Italian truffles. We have a nori with sesame and a tandoori flavor. And so our flavor profiles are pretty different compared to our competitors. And we have more things up our sleeves that we're really excited.
Do you see, and have you done this already, where you're going to retire flavors? You know, hey, this flavor is only available for 6 months and then it goes away and there's a new one.
Yeah, so we're looking into doing seasonal flavors for sure.
And when we had started, the farmers market was a great place for us to develop the flavors. You know, all the flavors that we have currently in the stores now, it was through the farmers market that we were trial and error. And, you know, week after week, we'd be like, we would even do like samples. You know, this one had more jalapeno and this one had more cheese. Which do you like? And we used, you know, their feedback in situations where it would help us fine-tune our recipe.
So how do you keep doing that going forward? Because I think that's key, right? The not only innovating on your end, but, you know, especially with taste, because it's such a personal thing, obviously. So keeping the customer in the loop and keeping close to your customer is really important. Are you guys thinking about how you continue to keep that in the fiber of your culture and who your company is?
Absolutely, yeah. And so we still do a lot on social media as far as different flavor ideas that we have and kind of ask our fans, which flavor would you prefer? What would you like to see? You know, and so we still do get our customer feedback that way.
We do a lot with donations as well. We donate a lot of product. With Vanessa coming from a nonprofit background, we give a lot to charities, and we even started a program called We Pop When You Pop campaign, and Vanessa's kind of been heading that. But we give back a lot of product, and it has allowed us to get it out there to people that might not find it otherwise.
It's nice because there's this virtuous circle, right? You guys are doing it not because you want to grow your business, but because you want to give back. But yet there is this business benefit to it as well, which is it's nice when it works out that way.
For sure,
Vanessa, we segued. I lost kind of the moment earlier when you talked about your nonprofit. There's not a lot of people that move from nonprofit to the for-profit world, right? You see a lot more of it go the other way. Mm-hmm. People are with for-profit companies. They get disenchanted with the business world and move into nonprofit. What was that transition like for you, going from nonprofit to being an entrepreneur to now being really in charge of a rocket ship?
Mm-hmm. I love the nonprofit world. Any opportunity that I have or we have to give back, we love. And just with our business model itself, we're able to, you know, make dollar donations and then in-kind product donations to different charities. And so it'll always be a part of our fiber to be that way. It's a part of our company's fiber to give back. The transition for me was tough. I think that when I was working for the nonprofit, I had a very unhealthy relationship with the way in which I was working, because I felt like if I wasn't working all the time, then I wasn't raising enough money, which meant that more kids weren't getting serviced. And so...
And you were... Tell us what the nonprofit... I know it was related to kids, but I don't know what it was, what the program was.
It was called Spirituality for Kids, or it still is. And essentially, we would help kids identify their inner gifts and talents and teach them that it is their purpose to strengthen that and share that with the world. And so it was really a motivational program for kids. A lot of social and emotional learning was taught there. And there were a ton of studies done on the program that really showed that, you know, the before and afters of the kids where, you know, they were much happier after the course. There was less depression. There were stronger leadership skills. And we
taught all
kids.
So that has a lot of intrinsic rewards.
Absolutely.
Business is different. It has a different kind of rewards. Do you find that the things that most of your friends think would be rewarding running a business like yours is indeed rewarding, or are there other areas that motivate you?
Well, so with the program and teaching kids, you know, that it's their purpose to fill this certain potential that they have, there was a piece of me that felt like inauthentic teaching that because I hadn't felt like I had reached my own personal potential yet. And through pop art, you know, I'm able to do that. I'm able to see, well, how far can I get in my life? And so really to circle that back around is a goal for me, you know, to reach, you know, to do things that I never thought that I could possibly do them, and then go back to the kids and show them, look, you can do this too.
That's powerful. Thanks for sharing that. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk some more with Mike and Vanessa Dobson, co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet Popcorn. Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Mike and Vanessa Dobson, co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet Popcorn. So my last question to you was about transitioning from nonprofit to profit. And kind of related on the profit side, it takes a lot of money to grow a company like this. Have you guys bootstrapped this all? Have you taken outside investment, or how have you navigated that?
We have bootstrapped it all.
Good for you.
Yes.
And Mike, I sent you an email before the show just asking for some background information to kind of help me with my research. And probably the fact that surprised me the most after hearing that you're going to be in 1,000 stores by the end of this year was that you guys have the two of you working in the business and one part-time employee. Two part-time employees, my mistake. And you're going to be servicing 1,000 stores here pretty soon, which tells me you've had to contract out the manufacturing. Obviously, we talked earlier about the distribution of it. Is that how you've been able to grow this, by just avoiding the big capital expensive pieces of things? Was that a conscious decision? Did you guys ever think, well, maybe we want to have this kitchen here in Utah and we want to be popping all this popcorn here locally?
Yeah, the strengths that Vanessa and I have are really in marketing, sales, and branding. And we decided that in finding a manufacturer that can maintain the quality product, then we can focus on that aspect and grow it that way. And so we took that approach, and it has contributed to our success, because we are not spending day in, day out producing the product.
I think it was a brilliant decision, by the way. But I didn't expect you to have gone that route. I expected you to have some big kitchen in West Valley or out by the airport in one of the big warehouses. And
It was a thought, you know, where there was a moments that we looked at both very intensely, and it was...
We did really start walking down that road. We had a down payment on the next phase of industrial equipment, and, you know, the more steps we took in that direction, the more, I don't know, it just seemed like something wasn't right about it. And, you know, we are more people.
Right.
You know, we like to go out there and sell. We like doing
hard.
The marketing. We like
manufacturing's hard.
Yeah,
and so you're manufacturing popcorn.
So. Yep, and we come up with all of our recipes. So we're still involved. We still have an R&D kitchen where we develop all of our flavors. And once the recipe is done, we pass it to our manufacturers to take over.
And, you know, it's interesting because the recipe development, Mike, you mentioned marketing and branding is kind of your core skills. Those are all creative skills. And the skills to run a complex manufacturing cooking facility and be compliant with all the rules and regulations, that's a whole different set of skills. So I think you guys have chose wisely. You know, one of the things I like about entrepreneurship is, first off, it's very daunting, right? I mean, it's an impossible job. And if you knew all the hats you had to wear going in, you may not have jumped into it so eagerly and excitedly. But you find out you have skills that maybe you didn't know early on. And Mike, you mentioned branding and marketing. Were those skills that you guys knew that you had, or did you just kind of discover over time? And Mike, let me give a little background before you reply to that, because you mentioned you're a photographer. And you're quite an accomplished photographer, right? You've had exhibits in San Francisco, Berkeley, Prague, Barcelona. So you've had a lot of success in that area. And I can see somebody that has a good eye for photography probably has a good eye for brand building. Did you make that connection ahead of time, or how did you find out you were good at those areas?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a connection there. I am the type of person that when we started working in the food industry, I would find myself walking down food aisles and just looking at packaging and looking at, you know, what's the difference? What makes this special? Why is this catching my eye?
Some awful packaging.
There is.
It's
unfortunately, yeah. You know, it might be a wonderful product inside and terrible packaging on the outside and vice versa. But you will more likely buy the product that speaks to you.
You may not judge a book by its cover, but when it comes to something you're going to eat, you definitely do judge it by its packaging.
Mm-hmm. And so we started paying attention to all those details and sort of what makes things stand out on the shelf and what makes you drawn to certain things. And I think having an eye in photography and a background in that helped with the development of the branding and the packaging.
Yeah, and it's neat that now that you've done it, you're like, you know what, I'm pretty good at it. I mean, you look at some of the packages out there, and when you hear the story of what goes into that, I had a friend that worked for General Foods, and the granola that goes on top of the yogurts, and that was her big breakthrough, and that took years. And the packaging is fine on it; it's beautiful, it's a good product, but years of her life in product testing. And you know, if you guys wanted to get in the yogurt business and you thought putting granola on top, how long do you think it would take you to explore that? Maybe a month?
Yeah.
A couple weeks? It's crazy what happens in grocery, because and you guys are going to run up against this at some point as well. You're going to have to be careful. Once you have that established brand, then job number one is protecting that mm-hmm. brand, and all of a sudden experimenting and exploring gets harder. But you've got many years, I suspect, until that becomes an issue for you guys. Speaking of being entrepreneurs, was it something that you knew you always wanted to do at some point, or was it really the opportunity came and you saw it and you jumped on it, or was it something you always thought in the back of your mind, I'd like to start a business?
We both have entrepreneurial spirits. I've started other things in the past that were not successful. You know, a friend of mine and I, we started a PR company, and you know, we got
a
few clients.
I'm guessing?
This was actually in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I lived there for 7 years, and the two of us started a PR company together, and you know, had a few clients, but at the end of the day, it didn't work. And there were a few other things that I had started, and you know, never really panned out to anything. And so that spirit was always there. And so when I was working with a nonprofit, that was my first like real 9-to-5 job that I had.
We both have worked.
Being a photographer often is a very entrepreneurial endeavor as well, as I would guess.
Yeah. I mean, you work for yourself, you work freelance, and you have to hustle to get more clients, to get more jobs. And I think that has helped, because it's being an entrepreneur is a lot of hustle, and it's a lot of you are in charge of your own hours, but at the end of the day, if things don't get done, it's because you didn't get it done. So you have to put in those hours, you have to do the hustle, you have to you know, work as hard as you can to be successful.
What about the decision for you two to be partners in this business? I mean, you guys are married, mm-hmm. husband and wife, and a lot of people tell you, don't do that. what's your experience been?
We started our relationship off working together. So we had done it before. I had a venue space that I was producing some things at Sundance Film Festival. And so I was here from Los Angeles and put an ad out on Craigslist for a designer, and in walks Michael. So I interviewed him and hired him, and we started working together. So we've had working relationships before. And it just seemed like a natural fit. We were such a good team that, you know, we work really well together. So it's been obviously a balancing act of, okay, now we're a romantic married couple, now we're business partners, now we're, you know, so it's definitely learning a lot about balance, but at the same time, like, we work really well together.
We have different strengths, and I think that we, you know, are continually learning, you know, what we're good at, and to sort of separate and allow each one to shine in that particular aspect of the business.
And if friends of yours were thinking about going into business together, husband and wife, what advice would you give them? How should they think about that? What are some cautions that they should think about?
That's a tough one. I don't know if, I think our story is somewhat unique, where we are able to make it work. But it takes a lot of, you know, conscious balancing, where, you know, you're not talking about work when you're out to dinner. And
my parents worked together, and it was hard. It was 24/7, you know. They'd be at work and talking about work and complaining about their kids, me. And then they'd be home and they'd be talking about work. So it's hard to cut it off.
For sure.
So you both better love what you're doing in business. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk some more with Mike and Vanessa Dobson, co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet Popcorn. Welcome to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Mike and Vanessa Dobson, co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet Popcorn. Vanessa, I saw that you're in the Goldman Sachs program called 10,000 Small Businesses. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to some other business owners that have gone through that program. And they just rave about it. Are you currently in the program, or have you finished it?
I'm a recent graduate of the program.
Okay. And tell our audience what it is, and maybe share a little bit about what it sounds like. I read somewhere that you got a lot out of it.
Absolutely.
Maybe it was on a Twitter comment. It looked like they were actually filming a commercial with you. It looked like you were in a studio. But give a little background. What is it, and what were some of the key takeaways you got from that program?
Sure. So Goldman Sachs started a program here in Utah just a few years ago that it essentially gives small business owners an MBA on steroids, if you will. You know, it's
That was your Twitter quote. Yeah, MBA on steroids.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And so you go through all of these different modules that focus on everything from finance to sales and marketing to negotiations and legal. And so so it's really building a team and becoming a better leader. And so through the program, they ask you, they give you, you know, different assignments, but at the same time, you're writing a growth plan, which is a more practical business plan. And there's a lot of self-reflection work in there on leadership and different aspects. And so so you develop this growth plan for your business, focusing on all of these different areas, and they have really great mentors that you work with that sort of help you develop this plan. And then you graduate and are able to start conquering your goals.
Right.
So,
were there some insights you got out of the growth plan that you hadn't been thinking about before?
I would have to say that finance is not one of my strong points. And so just being in that class, I was able to really get a better understanding as far as, you know, your P&L reports and what you should be looking for, and get understanding what some of the key metrics that we should really be focusing on to run a successful business are. And so we're able to start using that.
You know, and it brings up an interesting point, because grocery stores tend to drag, you know, terms are really important to them. How long do you have to pay? And so growth is a great thing, but growth can also crush a company from a cash flow standpoint.
Absolutely.
Were there any eye openings as you kind of penciled that out and looked at the growth, and how were you able to get ahead of that and say, here's how we're going to make sure that's not an issue for us?
So we were able to develop a much more detailed projections for our company, and we were able to see, you know, 6 months in advance, oh, wow, we're actually going to need a cash infusion here, and we're going to need one here, versus, you know, we were running our company a little bit more reactively before.
Right. Most people do.
Yeah,
where it was
like all of a sudden.
The value of the planning is you can be proactive.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so do you have a relationship with a commercial bank to help you with the cash flow gap, or how are you handling that?
Because
you don't have any outside investors. You've bootstrapped it all.
Absolutely. And we self-funded a lot of it ourselves as well. But we work with Chase Bank here in Salt Lake City, and we have a line of credit with them.
And how tough was that? We all hear that it's hard for small companies to get loans.
It is.
Was that almost impossible, or was it easier than you may have thought it would be?
Banks are funny. You know, they like to give money to companies that don't need it.
Exactly.
And so it took us a little longer than we wanted to actually get finance or a line of credit from them. And even still, you know, we'd like it to be more. So...
We'll keep an eye on that, because with growth like what you guys have, that could be a surprise that comes up. But it sounds like you've got the tools and the forecasting ability to watch that. That's a really important piece. You know, that's kind of a tactical question I just asked you. From a strategic standpoint, do you think after going through the Goldman Sachs program, you look at your business strategically different than you did before going in? What does pop art mean to you today, and what do you think it meant? How is that different from maybe when you entered the program?
I think before the program, you know, we had more of a mom and pop essence of our company, where we were getting everything that we needed to get done, but there wasn't an actual system around certain things. And so after the program, we were able to start working on different systems to run our business a little bit more efficiently. And so it's just, you know, we're kind of breaking in out of that really small business frame of mind into a little bit more of a bigger business mindset of systems and operations and things like that.
That's powerful. And the sooner you can make that, because you probably don't think of it yet, but you're no longer a small business, right? You're definitely a medium and quickly becoming a big business. Being in 1,000 grocery stores is big business. So congratulations
Thank
on that.
You.
You guys were in Oprah's magazine I think it was this past summer, right?
August, mm-hmm. Yeah.
This past August. And that had to help. How did that opportunity present itself?
It was at one of the food shows that we participated in, and we... At these food shows, you put out samples and you meet, you know, thousands of people a day. And they came by and they kind of had their name tag hidden, so we didn't necessarily know who it was. And they took some samples.
Those are the people you really want to pay attention
oh,
to at trade
sure,
shows when
yeah.
you can't read their name tag. It's not by accident.
And they contacted us a week after the food show, and they were interested in samples. And
yeah, I got the email, and you know, they're like, is it possible to get samples tomorrow? And I'm like, absolutely. Do you want us to come with the product? Like, what do you need? Of course,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
So we sent it to them, and you know, a couple of weeks later, they had let us know that we were going to be in their August issue as the find for Oprah magazine.
So there's these pivotal points. I would argue that was a really important point for your company, right?
Absolutely.
That oftentimes you don't know at the time it's a pivotal point. What do you think would have happened if this person whose name tag you couldn't read said, hey, can I get samples of this? He said, well, it's been a really busy trade show. When I get back to the office, probably 3 or 4 weeks, a month, sure, we'll get you some. And then you forgot to send it. You wouldn't be in Oprah magazine, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it has ripple effects. I know you're going to be, is it good housekeeping that you're going to be in? Probably going to hit the shelves here pretty soon. It's the December issue, which
mm-hmm.
for some reason comes out in November. I don't understand the magazine business. But and did that piggyback off of the Oprah magazine, or was that completely different, and how did that come to be?
So they... they found our product at a store around the block from their office in New York City. And that's how they first found our product. And then they did their research and found out, oh, wow, you know, this other magazine in the same building actually had them in their August issue as well. So, yeah, and again, sent samples. And they're having us as a healthy snack item for the holidays.
Had you proactively reached out to any magazines before any of this?
Mm-mm.
Isn't that crazy? Because you started a PR agency.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we were terrible, though, so I wouldn't even say that I have a good experience there.
You think going forward, once a quarter, reaching out to magazines makes sense? Or
absolutely.
I would think it does.
Yeah, you know? No, for sure. And that's something else that we are, with this next phase of our growth, we are looking at different PR companies to help us with that.
Well, you'll be in a good position to judge which one you want to work with.
And it made more sense for us when we are in more stores nationally to be featured in magazines, because then they can run down to their local store, their local Whole Foods.
Yeah, there's a moment in time. Fortunately for you guys, the moment's now. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Mike and Vanessa Dobson, founders of Pop Art Popcorn. Being in 1,000 stores is a blessing, and it's also going to be a little bit of a challenge. So what keeps you awake as you think about that challenge?
What doesn't keep us awake? Oh my God. There are so many different things, especially when you're starting out in stores. You want to make sure that the stores are fully supported. It's a new product. You want people tasting it. And so, you know, you have to set up pretty aggressive promotions for the stores. Stores also want a free fill, which means that they want the first case of each flavor for free. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you multiply that by, you know, thousands of stores, it turns out to be a lot.
Yeah, when you get all the, and do you have to pay shelving fees as well?
So far, we've been able to skate around that, which has been nice.
For 1,000 stores, that's great. That's really hard to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So far, but, you know, we have some of the bigger chains coming on board next year that, you know, that's what they expect and that's what they get. So just preparing for that.
Yeah, why we were so successful here locally in Utah is Vanessa and I would go out and we would deliver, we would demo, we would be there and talk about the product constantly. And we are trying to take that model and put it in all of the stores nationally where we are without us physically being there, and finding the right ambassadors and demo people and brokers to help support. Mm-hmm. When we can't be there, it's a challenge, but we are finding some good team out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before we end, I want to give you a chance. We talked a little bit about your nonprofit background. And Mike, I think it was on your LinkedIn profile, causes you care about, one of them, I believe, was animal welfare. What is there an organization here locally that you guys support, and why is that group important?
So we're really excited. So with our We Pop When You Pop charity campaign, essentially, that's a campaign that we started where we ask our fans and our customers to give us feedback on charities that they feel are doing necessary work in the world. And so we've gotten some feedback from some people through emails and on social media. And this year, we're focusing on local charity, and we've awarded it. We haven't announced it yet, but it actually it'll be announced. It's going to be for the YMCA. So, and they have a lot of great programs for kids here in Salt Lake, and so we're going to be awarding them the We Pop When You Pop charity campaign award. So.
I think it's neat that from the beginning you guys had this charitable mindset. And people, it's one of those things that's easy to say, well, once we get big, then we'll do this. But, you know, if you don't do it from the beginning, it's unlikely that you're ever going to develop the culture for that. And then final question. So 2014, magical year, huge growth. What's next for Pop Art?
Continue growth and success, hopefully.
Things are growing at a rapid pace, and we have, like, in 2013, we focused on Utah. 2014, we kind of focused a lot on the West Coast. 2015, we're going to expand more into the East Coast. And
we'll be launching nationally with Whole Foods in 7 of their regions this January. So that's really going to help expand our footprint.
Absolutely. Well, 1,000 stores is a lot of stores to keep stocked with popcorn. Thank you for your time. I know your time is very precious right now, so thank you for joining us. Mike and Vanessa Dobson are the co-founders of Pop Art Gourmet. Thank you guys for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you so much. Dan.
The Bottom Line is recorded at the KCPW Studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. You can also hear us on iTunes, and you can follow us at Twitter, @KCPW Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week for The Bottom Line.